welcome, Dave. We've started the meeting. I'm an addict. My name is Steve, and I'm going to introduce our speaker tonight. I've met Dave on a number of occasions over the last little while, a few years, I think, the meeting that he's a part of, on virtual in the States. And I've always enjoyed what he's had to say. He's very kind. He has a great calmness about him, and I don't know much about him. I'm really looking forward to hearing him share his experience tonight with us tonight. For this, the 40 or 45 minutes, his experience, I don't know, his journey into Narcotics Anonymous, and where he's at today. I'll leave him to share his clean date and all that good stuff. So, Dave, floor is yours, my friend. Please jump in and share with us.
All right. Thanks for having me. My name is Dave, and I'm an addict.
Hi, hello, Dave.
Hey, Dave.
Nice to see you on this side of the
welcome.
World.
Welcome. Welcome.
Okay, I guess nobody's muted, huh? All right. Kind of weird. I don't see any. Don't see any video, but that's quite all right. Okay. Let's start at the beginning. I didn't come to Narcotics Anonymous to get clean. Well, that's for sure. I mean, I've heard a lot of people say that. They didn't like using anymore, so they came to Narcotics Anonymous, and that's not my experience. You know, the reason I wound up in Narcotics Anonymous is because I kept running out. You know, as long as I could use and I can find ways and means to get more, then life was okay. But towards the end, kept running out. And whenever I ran out, that sucked. You know, to me, that was terrible. And at the end, I ran out more and more frequently. And I didn't like that feeling. And up until that point in time, I had been trying ways and means to keep using without my life turning into shit. You know, and I eventually ran out of things that I could think of to keep using and not suffer the consequences. And as we all know, that's nothing that we could find. You know, the all consequences always caught up with us, and we always wound up running out. So finally I got to a point where I started to ask for help. You know, and what I thought, you know, I finally decided to go into a detox. And what my plan was that I was going to take off some time from work, go to this detox, come out, and go back to my life as it was. And what happened was is that 3 weeks after I got out of that first detox, I remember calling up my insurance company and asking them to approve another detox for me to go to. And I remember the person on the phone asking, well, what's going to be different this time? You know, and I had to admit that I didn't know. I said, I don't know if this, you know, if this is going to work. I don't know anything. All I know is I need help, you know, and so that began my journey. And one good thing that happened in the first detox was that I heard the message of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, H and I came in and brought the message. And of course, I didn't think they knew anything about me and that I didn't fit and it wouldn't work and all of that stuff. But the one good thing that I had going for me was that I had ran out of ideas that I could think of myself, and I knew I needed help. And began the process of getting clean. You know, I'd like to say that I never used again, but that's not the case. You know, the one thing I did get right was that I started going to meetings. You know, I couldn't necessarily stop using, but I could go to meetings. You know, and I'll have to admit, I did go to meetings. I did go to meetings high at first. You know, I remember going into the bathrooms at these meeting places and puking. You know, but along the way, started to hear things, and I discovered that what would help is that if I threw obstacles up in front of me, and that first one, you know, because I started to realize that it was the first one that would get me in trouble, and that if I could avoid the first one, then maybe I'd have a shot. When people talk about, you know, walking around without money in their pocket. And the first time I heard that, I was like, man, what a wuss, you can't walk around with money. But you know, if I had enough money for the first one in my pocket and the obsession to use came and hit me, more often than not, I'd be gone. You know, so I started trying something like that. You know, I started walking around with just $5 in my pocket. You know, I'd have a dollar to throw in a basket. I could buy a cup of coffee, cigarettes, and I wouldn't have enough for the first one. And another thing I would try was I would try to go to a meeting first. You know, I remember. Using so much that my wife would drive past the meeting places to check and see if my car was in the parking lot. You know, she didn't trust me that much. But eventually, this started to work. And I remember one day, I'll never forget this. Remember one day, I have the obsession, and I'm going to say, let me go to the meeting first. Then if I feel like getting high afterwards, then I'll go and take care of business. And I went to this meeting, and I don't remember the meeting at all. But I went to this meeting, and for some reason, I didn't get high that day. And I didn't realize it at first. I realized it like a couple of days later. And I said to myself, I said, wow, I really wanted to use that day, but I went to the meeting first and I didn't get high. I was like, maybe there's something to this. You know, and it was little miracles and occurrences like that started to give, you know, that if I just kept doing the right thing, that maybe, just maybe I'd be okay. You know, and days started turning into days. I started to be able to go to sleep. You know, it took a while. It took several months before I was able to fall asleep through the night. And one day, I realized that I was no longer obsessing about getting high. That somehow the obsession to use had been lifted. which to me was like the wildest thing ever. You know, I had been in the obsession so bad that when I'd put my head down on a pillow at night to try to go to sleep, there'd be nothing but graphical images running through my brain. And then to one day have this obsession lifted from my mind was just beyond my wildest dreams. You know, after that occurred and I realized that it had, and I realized that I didn't have the power over making that happen, that there was a power greater than me working in my life. And that if I just gave in, just surrendered, and kept following this power, then maybe I'd be okay. And so my recovery from there. And I've never, in my entire recovery, I've never thought about being where I am today. You know, I had realized that all the stuff that I could dream up in my own head was finite. And that this power greater than me was beyond that. And that if I used my own thinking, that I was just going to sell myself short. That if I could just put one foot in front of the other and keep going forward, that maybe, just maybe, I'd be okay. You know, and that has proven true throughout my recovery. You know, when I had about a year clean, I went to the doctors and I got a checkup, you know, from the feet up. And I was diagnosed with this thing that they called non-A, non-B hepatitis, which we all know today as hepatitis C. And so for the decades, this virus took a toll on my body. You know, at first we didn't know what it was and nobody knew what was going on, but a couple of decades later, I would go to work and I'd come home and I'd sit in a chair and I couldn't even get up anymore. You know, and at the time it was a very scary thing because there was no hope. But the one thing that I did know was that it wasn't HIV, and no matter what, I could deal with it. You know, as long as I trusted in my higher power and I had faith, then I could deal. You know, so I sought help, and all the options we had were terrible. You know, I remember going on two different trial medicines, you know, and all the time what we had was interferon. And I remember the first time that I took interferon, I shook for 2 hours straight. You know, I was just shivering and cold and shaking, and I was like, "Oh my God, we gotta do this." And so that began a journey that would take me through at least 5 different of taking interferon because they didn't work. You know, at some point in time, I'd always have to stop because my blood counts would get too low, and it didn't work, and it would drive me crazy. And you know, but I still had to keep going on. You know, I kept trying. Whatever they would come up with, whatever they would suggest, I would go with. And somehow, through this journey, I was able to work. I kept working. I worked every single day. I don't know how. You know, it was a real struggle, but I did. And then at some point in time, my liver had started to deteriorate so much that I wound up on the transplant list. And, you know, luckily for me, I wasn't on the list all that long. I think it was on a couple of months. And I got this call. Like, I had gone to work that day. I get home from work and I get this call and they say, all right, we have a liver for you. I need you to be at the hospital and such and such, you know, as soon as you can get here. And I was like, well, can I take a shower first? I just got off of work. And they're like, nope, you got to get down here right now. So my wife was at the gym and I had to go to the gym to find her because I'm all shaking and scared and didn't know if I could drive myself to the hospital. So I finally get her out of the gym, and I'm like, honey, we got to go to the hospital now. And she starts freaking out, you know, and I'm like, listen, honey, I think one of us needs to get our act together because I don't think I could drive. You know, she took me down, you know, and I signed my life away. And let me tell you that it took every ounce of faith and trust that I had to not jump off the gurney as they were wheeling me down to the OR and run down the hallway with my bare ass hanging out. You know. And luckily by that time I had been in recovery for a decade and a half. You know, so I had built up a little bit of faith and a little bit of trust. And I'd learned to apply some principles in my life. And I just let them take over. You know, and at the time, they would give you statistics about 5-year survival rate. And that's not a very encouraging sign, you know, but I was determined, you know, and I followed all the directions and I had made peace with the life that I had, and I'm embarking on a new way of life, which I had already done before. So I had gained this experience of starting a whole new life. You know, so, you know, I go through this and I come out the other side and you know, I have to take medication on a regular basis. I have to do certain things. I have to stay away from certain things. But the important thing is I get to live my life. And this showed me that as long as I put one foot in front of the other and I have faith and trust that I'm going to be okay, you know, that no matter what comes down the pike, no matter what happens in my life, I'm going to be okay. And that's how I live my life today. You know, I'm 15 years out from this transplant. And I live my life today like when I wake up in the morning and open my eyes, that's gravy. You know, this is another day that I get to live and enjoy my life. And as long as I have faith and trust, then I can enjoy it. You know, and I love my life today. It's so much easier to live without having boundaries and limits on your life. You know, like I don't know where I'm going to be tomorrow. I don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. But I'm here and I'm going to enjoy it. You know, still to this day, I do service. You know, service is a big part of my recovery. You know, one of the things that I've loved to do since I had 6 months clean was to participate in H&I. And I still do H&I today. Matter of fact, next month in my area, we're going to start a new meeting at the local correctional institution, which I think is really cool. You know, we get to take the message into people we know that aren't going to get out. You know, they can't get out to go to a regular meeting. You know, that's not necessarily part of my story. You know, but I can give back. You know, I can help. And I've been given so much of my recovery that giving back a little bit is no big thing. You know, I mean, participating in my recovery is one of the things that I enjoy the most. And service reminds me that I'm a member of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I get to participate in my recovery. I've moved a bunch of times in my recovery, and every time that I've gotten to a new place, a new area, a new state maybe, one of the things that I make sure that I do is I go down to my local NA meeting and I register as an addict. You know, I get to raise my hand and I say, my name is Dave and I'm an addict. And I couldn't do that the first meeting that I went to at a detox. You know, the best I could muster was I said, my name is Dave, and I just got out of detox. You know, I couldn't say that word addict after my name. But today, I'm a bona fide addict. Just doing the best that I can. You know, I'm not perfect. I'm never going to be perfect. And I used to think perfectionism was an asset. You know, I've come to realize that that's not necessarily true. Humility is an asset. And humility means that I'm just human. I have my pluses, I have my minuses, but I have a shot to be better tomorrow than I am today. And I'm so grateful to have that chance. The one thing I have not done so far in recovery is look that gift of having the obsession to use be lifted from me in the mouth. I don't ever want to spit in the face of that gift. I don't ever want to put that gift in jeopardy. That is the greatest gift that I've been given. And I honor that gift today. I continue doing whatever it is that I need to do to keep that up front. And I'm grateful that everybody allowed me to come out here and share with them today. I don't know if I can go 45 minutes, but hopefully I've gone long enough. And thank you for letting me share.